You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday the 4th of November 2021 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming live today at radioalbion.com because we have with us geopolitical analyst Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson from rusjournal.org. Good day, Matt. How are you doing? Haven't spoken to you for a while. We missed last week's episode. Did you manage to get by? How did you manage to get by without doing the weekly live Daily Nationalist, I wonder? How are you doing anyway?
Well, you know, I think I need to find a place to get pain pills. That might help get through those culturalist weeks. I don't know a source, but maybe that would help. But to be honest with you, you asked me, you said good day. Today is one of the best weather days I have come across in just like 3 days a year that I'm happy with. And today is one of them. In Western Pennsylvania, this is a absolutely perfect day for sunshine and weather, and it's cold, and it's today is almost a perfect day.
Well, it's a good day for our listeners, I think, because we have a speech here from Putin that is really just confirming the sort of things that we talk about ourselves. I first actually read this speech on the American Renaissance website the other week, and I thought, well, this is absolutely fantastic. And I've mentioned it a few times already on the Daily Nationalist, but we haven't actually had a good look at this speech. And it's actually a speech that Putin gave at the Valdai Discussion Club. And just before we get into it, I'm just wondering, do you know anything about this discussion club, Matt? Do you know what sort of things they normally discuss there?
Yeah, it's these are the corporations that sponsor this. There's a steel company, Alpha Bank. These are the companies that are sanctioned by the West. So this is kind of an alternative to Davos. This is the anti-Davos. So these are companies that are elites, no doubt, in the East, but they finance this as a way to challenge these same kind of conferences in the West. All of these, there's like four or five companies that finance it, and they're all sanctioned. So it's a very, very different kind of an organization.
So Davos will be talking about promoting transgenderism and multiculturalism, and then the Valdai Discussion Club will be talking about this subject called this healthy conservatism, as Putin calls it. We'll find out about that in a minute. But he begins, he says, "We have arrived somewhere paradoxical. As an example, for two decades, the most powerful nation in the world has been conducting military campaigns in two countries that it cannot be compared to by any standard. But in the end, it had to wind down operations without achieving a single goal that it had set for itself going in 20 years ago, and to withdraw from these countries, causing considerable damage to others and itself. In fact, the situation has worsened dramatically. But that is not the point. Previously, a war lost by one side meant victory for the other side, which took responsibility for what was happening. For example, the defeat of the United States in the Vietnam War, for example, did not make Vietnam a black hole. On the contrary, a successfully developing state arose there, which admittedly relied on the support of a strong ally. Things are different now. No matter who takes the upper hand, the war does not stop, but just changes form. As a rule, the hypothetical winner is reluctant or unable to ensure a peaceful post-war recovery, and only worsens the chaos and the vacuum, posing a danger to the world." And this is a way of looking at it that I hadn't actually thought of before. I mean, what he's saying here, Afghanistan should really be restructuring America, I would have thought, since Afghanistan actually won this war. What are your thoughts on what Putin has to say here, Matt?
Well, you know, we can only hope. It was 2 years ago I first wrote that the U.S. is surrendering in Afghanistan, that they've lost every war they've been a part of. I even want to say World War II, since the Soviet Union did almost all the work. But the difference between Vietnam and Afghanistan is that Vietnam was a leftist, semi-Marxist state that the elite, although not the state, but the elite in the West supported. Therefore, the anti-war movement was huge and all that. Afghanistan was a religious nationalist state, and therefore both sides of the make-believe political spectrum hated them. So that's when all the thank you for your service nonsense started. So that's why this is being treated very differently. And of course, it lasted a long time with high casualties, although you would never read about that. The casualties are lied about. You didn't see an anti-war movement. You saw leftists voting for this war, voting for more credits. Same thing for the neoconservatives, and that's the difference. And of course, they destroyed the country. The Taliban are the only group that actually has the discipline and the tradition and the strength, not to mention the support, to make it happen with Russian and Chinese help. That's the difference between the two sides, and I think Putin's very much aware of that.
Well, he also points out that the war never ends, and of course the war is continuing, only now instead of America, it's ISIS-K, this suspicious group that only seems to go after the enemies of America. Well, Putin next moves on to globalization. He says, in recent decades, many have tossed around fancy concepts, claiming that the role of the state was outdated and outgoing. Globalization supposedly made national borders an anachronism and sovereignty an obstacle to prosperity. You know, I said it before and I will say it again. This is also what was said by those who attempted to open up other countries' borders for the benefit of their own competitive advantages. This is what actually happened, and as soon as it transpired that someone somewhere is achieving great results, they immediately returned to closing borders in general, and first of all their own customs borders and what have you, and started building walls. Well, were we supposed to not notice or what? Everyone sees everything and everyone understands everything perfectly well. Of course they do. There is no point in disputing it anymore. It is obvious. But events, when we spoke about the need to open up borders, events, as I said, went in the opposite direction. Only sovereign states can effectively respond to the challenges of the times and the demands of the citizens. Accordingly, any effective international order should take into account the interests and capabilities of the state and proceed on that basis, and not try to prove that they should not exist. Furthermore, it is impossible to impose anything on anyone, be it the principles underlying the socio-political structure or values that someone for their own reasons has called universal. After all, it is clear that when a real crisis strikes, there is only one universal value left, and that is human life, which each state decides for itself how best to protect, based on its abilities, culture, and traditions. So there's quite a bit here, Matt. What is he referring to when he's talking about closing borders and putting up walls? Is he talking about sanctions on Russia? I'm a little bit unclear on quite what he's talking about there.
Yeah, see, I didn't actually read the original, which usually I do when we talk about speeches. I think what he's referring to, and actually we talked about it quite a bit on the show, is that you have not only countries doing well, but country, the most important thing is that they're doing well outside of the American orbit with a totally different, in fact, opposite system to the neocon buccaneer capitalism that the West has. He's referring to Trump's sanctions on China. We had a show on the idea that whenever one of these countries does well, the American financial class says they're cheating and they're deliberately devaluing their currencies, and that's cheating, and therefore we have to do something about it. They said this about Switzerland, believe it or not, Vietnam, and China. No one could do well in a non-American system, therefore they're cheating somehow, and the U.S. can do nothing about it. So he's talking about China. And China has long overtaken the American economy. Most of the American economy is financial. They don't actually make anything. China makes things, even with American capital. So I think China is still much larger than the U.S. just doesn't reflect it in the GDP figures. But the minute the U.S. is losing and has, sucking money, sucking gold out of the country to the point where they're now invincible economically with all the gold Russia and China has, what is the U.S. going to do? It only has its market, and that's saturated. There's no credit left except for the big corporation. So no one really needs the American market anymore, especially today. So now the U.S. has really no choice but to claim it's cheating and they're stealing. They're literally coming over to America, stealing jobs and bringing them to China, which is unfortunately one of the dumb things that Trump said. It always irritated me, but it left to say it too, and so put up sanctions. There's something, you know, there, and then declare war. I mean, totally, you talk about being out of ideas. When warfare and sanctions, all you have left, it's a total admission of defeat for the U.S. system.
Well, I like the way he has a little dig at universal morality as well, where he's talking about imposing somebody else's values upon other people and for some reason deciding that they're universal. Because he next moves on to the importance of the preservation of morals. He says the importance of a solid support in the sphere of morals, ethics, and values is increasing dramatically in the modern fragile world. In point of fact, values are a product, a unique product of cultural and historical development of any nation. The mutual interlacing of nations definitely enriches them. Openness expands their horizons and allows them to take a fresh look at their own traditions. But the process must be organic, and it can never be rapid. Any alien elements will be rejected anyway, possibly bluntly. Any attempts to force one's values on others with an uncertain and unpredictable outcome can only further complicate a dramatic situation and usually produce the opposite reaction and an opposite from the intended result. And this really is the opposite of what America likes to promote, isn't it? America likes to promote what we call globo homo around the world on countries in Africa that are very conservative, very, very traditional, and they're told they can't have any aid money unless they start promoting homosexuality over there, which they didn't develop laws themselves saying that they wanted to promote homosexuality. It's just forced upon them by America. And of course, there's a reaction to that. So he's really drawing a line in the sand here, isn't he, Matt? He's really pointing out that Russia is opposing all of this stuff, don't you think?
Well, I have a book out on Putin's political theory, the only one of its kind, came out in 2012 under the Barnes Review Press. And I talk about this at some length. And it's and I realized that was before COVID, that was before Syria, and really nothing has changed. No one really knew this about him way back then. I was the only one talking about it. But you understand that Putin is talking about organic tradition, slow change. The U.S. doesn't have any of this. The U.S., the morality is based entirely on media control and Hollywood changing the default structures of the American mind. There is nothing organic about it. There's nothing ethnic about it. I mean, there's a Jewish elite that's totally in control of this in the media. But otherwise, you know, there's no organic source anymore. The country that, you know, struggled to write a constitution in the late 18th century, that doesn't exist. That whole mentality, it's like the Taliban, but by comparison to what we have today. But all civilizations in world history, with no exceptions, including the Greek, no civilization accepted homosexuality or feminism or easy divorce. The family, the extended family, they were identical in this respect. There is no ethnic culture anywhere that accepts this. It is extremely unnatural, and it comes from the Kabbalah and all this stuff, which we've spoken about elsewhere, but that's it. I mean, all civilizations are unified in this, and different classes and functions. The Platonic minimum, as Dugin said, no civilization except this one, it's not really a civilization, has ever accepted this stuff. And Putin is, you know, he's said things like this in the past. It is so unnatural and bizarre. And note too, he talks about the military situation. He talks about globalization. Then he talks about morals, knowing full well that the economic elite are also in charge of changing how people think, because you can't be a mindless consumer with a traditional moral system. It doesn't make any sense. So he's very deliberate. He's not stupid here, and he has excellent people writing his stuff for him.
Well, I think some civilizations have promoted these ideals, but it's usually right at the end of the civilization, and then it collapses because they've turned their back on all the traditions that built all the other civilizations, like the family being central and the family unit. Once you start attacking the family unit, the nation is not going to last much longer. Well, he moves on to liberalism next. He says, we look in amazement at the processes underway in the countries which have traditionally looked at as the standard bearers of progress. Of course, the social and cultural shocks that are taking place in the United States and Western Europe are none of our business. We are keeping out of this. Some people in the West believe that an aggressive elimination of entire pages from their own history, reverse discrimination against the majority in the interests of a minority, and the demand to give up the traditional notions of mother, father, family, and even gender, they believe that all of these are the mileposts on the path towards social renewal. Listen, I would like to point out once again that they have a right to do this. We are keeping out of this. But we would like to ask them to keep out of our business as well. We have a different viewpoint. At least the overwhelming majority of Russian society, it would be more correct to put it that way, has a different opinion on this matter. We believe that we must rely on our own spiritual values, our own historical tradition, and the culture of our multi-ethnic nation. And of course, I wouldn't agree that it's possible to actually have a multi-ethnic nation. What he's talking about there is the multi-ethnic Russian Federation there. And really, he's doing the right thing. I mean, we are his competitors, and he knows all he's got to do is just step back and allow the West to collapse. But part of him, I should imagine, part of him, because he is part of our own ethnicity and because he's a decent human being, he's pointing out the West is destroying itself, basically. He doesn't have to do that. I mean, he can step back and just wait for the West to destroy itself and Russia can take over. But he's being very charitable here, I think, in actually pointing this out. Don't you think, Matt?
Yes. You know, what you said before is correct. The mark of a dying civilization is when morality collapses. I think what he's saying here is that this is the first one to actually institutionalize it as a moral norm that's worth defending, even dying for. So you're right when you say he's saying, of course, there's a right and wrong here. Natural law and all civilizations have had this thing at its core. Only when it's dying do you see, which is, you know, exactly what we're trying to say here. And he's well aware of it. He knows that this system is unnatural, wrong, and destructive. It's going to destroy. It's already destroyed military. It's destroyed this basic cognition. And Russia doesn't have to fire a shot. China doesn't have to fire a shot. And yes, you know, he talks about the multi-ethnic thing all the time. First of all, he's referring to the Slavs, you know, Belarusians, Ukrainians. But then he's also referring to the Muslim populations in the south who tend to be very loyal to Moscow, and they have been for centuries. So he's referring to these traditionalist, you know, basically religious cultures. But by multi-ethnic, he usually means that the Slavs have, even maybe the Balts, that they're three members of the same family. And sometimes he includes the Muslims too, who, you know, certainly are excellent on some of this stuff, despite the Soviet despite Soviet attacks. But so this is, and I wouldn't even call the Soviet Union a civilization. It was just a Judaic transmission belt to steal the capital that the Russian worker had built up for centuries and give it to themselves, give it to the party. I wouldn't even call that a civilization.
Well, it's nice to see him talking negatively about the Soviet Union next. He says the advocates of so-called social progress believe they are introducing humanity to some kind of a new and better consciousness. Godspeed, hoist the flags, as we say, go right ahead. The only thing that I want to say now is that their prescriptions are not new at all. It may come as a surprise to some people, but Russia has been there already. After the 1917 revolution, the Bolsheviks, relying on the dogmas of Marx and Engels, also said that they would change existing ways and customs, and not just political and economic ones, but the very notion of human morality and the foundations of a healthy society. The destruction of age-old values, religion, and relations between people, up to and including the total rejection of family, we had that too, encouragement to inform on loved ones, all this was proclaimed progress, and by the way, was widely supported around the world back then and was quite fashionable, same as today. By the way, the Bolsheviks were absolutely intolerant of opinions other than theirs. This, I believe, should call to mind some of what we are witnessing now. Looking at what is happening in a number of Western countries, we are amazed to see the domestic practices which we fortunately have left, I hope, in the distant past. The fight for equality and against discrimination has turned into aggressive dogmatism bordering on absurdity. when the works of the great authors of the past, such as Shakespeare, are no longer taught at schools or universities because their ideas are believed to be backward. The classics are declared backward and ignorant of the importance of gender or race. In Hollywood, memos are distributed about proper storytelling and how many characters of what colour or gender should be in a movie. This is even worse than the agitprop department of the Central Committee of the Communist Party of the Soviet Union. And there speaks a man who would really know these things. I mean, we point out that it's similar to communism, it's similar to Bolshevism. And he lived through all of that, and he's pointing out that what we have today is even worse. Also pointing out this encouragement to inform on loved ones, and there is an encouragement to out people that haven't got jabbed yet or are against COVID. Are against immigration. We have this anti-terrorist organization Prevent, and they try to encourage family members to grass up other family members for having nationalist ideas or wanting to be against immigration, things like that. I mean, it is very similar to what was going on back then. It's just a shame that this hasn't actually received more coverage, I think, Matt. What are your thoughts on what he has to say here?
Well, there's so much here. I don't even know where to begin. One of the things, I guess, with the early part of grad school, so the early 90s, I read Solzhenitsyn's analysis of capitalism versus Soviet Marxism and the fact that they are more or less identical. Most of us grew up with the idea that these are opposites. One's free, the other isn't. One's free market, the other's totalitarianism planning. And I realized the ideological back, they're very similar. The difference is, though, one big difference is the Soviet Union depended on the state almost exclusively. But in the Western world, they're far more intelligent here. It's very different when you have the private sector becoming a monopoly, taking over the privately owned media, and because they meet together all the time, create a single, very Soviet-style agenda. People don't see it the same way when it's not the state. A lot of people, especially the neocons, they think only the state can be oppressive. The libertarians believe that too. And it's ridiculous, especially now that there's no difference between those two. But that's what makes liberalism totalitarian in the worst possible way, even worse than the Soviet Union. Because in the Soviet, you can point to the state, point to Lenin, and you have something to rally around or rally against. Here, it's hard. There isn't an individual, not even a single institution to point at. It's very hard to rally around an abstract concept of media monopoly. And that's the big difference. And that's one of the reasons it's in the idea that this is freedom. This is identical with freedom. People have had their basic cognition altered to the point where it's very hard to even have a conversation with them in that they're otherwise intelligent. So this is why the West has done better than the Soviets was very ham-handed. The state, you know, they had the gulags and everything else. No, here you have mental gulags. You have prison cells that are paved in gold. Very, very different situation. You know, yes, using celebrities and all of this, it's a far more sophisticated system to reach the same goal.
Well, it's a mentality that we are resisting against rather than an individual. All you have to do is look at Joe Biden to know that he's not the guy that's in charge of the American regime. Putin next brings up political correctness and how that works. He says zealots of these new approaches even go so far as to want to abolish these concepts altogether. That's referring to the family there. Anyone who dares mention that men and women actually exist, which is a biological fact, risk being ostracized. Parent number one and parent number two, birthing parent instead of mother, and human milk replacing breast milk because it might upset the people who are unsure about their own gender. I repeat, this is nothing new. In the 1920s, the so-called Soviet culture triggers also invented some newspeak, believing they were creating a new consciousness and changing values that way. And as I have already said, they made such a mess, it still makes one shudder at times. Not to mention some truly monstrous things when children are taught from an early age that a boy can easily become a girl and vice versa. That is, the teachers actually impose on them a choice we all supposedly have. They do so while shutting the parents out of the process and forcing the child to make decisions that can upend their entire life. They do not even bother to consult with child psychologists. Is a child at this age even capable of making a decision of this kind? Calling a spade, This verges on a crime against humanity, and it is being done in the name and under the banner of progress. And this is something that they instituted in Scotland a couple of months back, the Scottish National Party. They said that teachers can diagnose primary school children from the age of three whether they are confused about their gender. And if they diagnose them as being gender dysphoric, then they should start referring to them by the opposite gender to what their actual biological sex is. They should start referring to them by a different name and not tell the parents. I mean, it's absolutely incredible. You know, you could be sending your child to school and without you even knowing it, the teachers could be dressing them up as a little girl and referring them to them as a little girl all day long when they're supposed to be looking after them instead of their parents looking after them. It's hideous what's going on here. I'm so pleased that he's talking about this. And it's true. It is a crime against humanity that is going on here, don't you think?
It was the nationalist movement. 20 years ago, guys like me, guys like you who predicted all of this, none of this is new to us. And conservatives, dopey as they are, made fun of us, conspiracy theorists, none of this is going to happen. When we were getting censored and thrown off Facebook and everything else, they laughed. Now it's their turn and they're not laughing anymore. They're really a big problem here. And now they're sort of against this stuff. But just like with abortion and homosexuality, they'll eventually make their peace with it. And that's really what, conservatism in the West, what it does is consolidate the left. The left seems radical, just say 10 years earlier. Conservatives are opposed to it. The left wins. 10, 15 years later, the conservatives, they just want the more extreme variants of this to be stopped. They eventually make their peace with it. I mean, William Bennett was notorious for this. But he mentions the culture trip. And that term, actually in German, goes back to a guy named Abba Gordon and the so-called Gordon brothers, who were Jewish anarchists, who were some of the cultural authors of the early Soviet Union. The five institutions he wanted to destroy: the state, capitalism, colonialism, the school, and the family. And, of course, he defined those terms differently than we do. Of course, the state meant the crown, capitalism meant private ownership, the school, and, of course, the family was the father, the patriarchal idea. And that's what this culture movement in the Soviet Union was based on. Well, he was an anarchist and eventually was exiled. He was one of the authors of this early idea. And especially the sexual freedom of women. And it's not that you want to go to work. That's how they couched it. But that was a sexual idea that was tried in the USSR and failed so badly that you had orphans everywhere. He uses that word very explicitly. He's referring to just a few people. He knows exactly what he's saying. He'll be called an anti-Semite for this, at least in certain journals. And of course, by the time he came of age, the Soviet Union had rejected a lot of that because that initial Jewish generation was fleeing the country and moving to Israel, the U.S., including this guy. So, the Soviet Union was changing. It became culturally a relatively conservative country in the 1970s because the Jews had left it, and the anti-Zionist movement, everything else. This was slowly rebuilding because you can't have a civilization of any kind if guys like this are going to rule it. The point is to create such chaos that the regime then will come in and fix it all and they'll completely remake humanity. That's the entire point. The entire point of the Soviet cultural movement was to create the new Soviet man. And you can't do this without this nonsensical stuff. It's one more example how the Soviet Union and the U.S. are identical in their cultural ideology.
Well, over here in the West, it's the conservatives that are causing these problems. The conservatives have been in power in Britain for the last 20 years, bringing in gay marriage and bringing in more immigration than we have ever had in the past. Yet Putin's solution to this is also conservatism, and he calls it healthy conservatism. He says, "I have already mentioned that in shaping our approaches, we will be guided by a healthy conservatism." That was a few years ago when passions on the international arena were not yet running as high as they are now. although, of course, we can say that the clouds were gathering even then. Now, when the world is going through a structural disruption, the importance of reasonable conservatism as the foundation for a political course has skyrocketed, precisely because of the multiplying risks and dangers and the fragility of the reality around us. This conservative approach is not about an ignorant traditionalism, a fear of change or a restraining game, much less about withdrawing into our own shell. It is primarily about reliance on a time-tested tradition, the preservation and growth of the population, a realistic assessment of oneself and others, a precise alignment of priorities, a correlation of necessity and possibility, a prudent formulation of goals, and a fundamental rejection of extremism as a method. And frankly, in the impending period of global reconstruction, which may take quite long, with its final design being uncertain, moderate conservatism is the most reasonable line of conduct as far as I see it. It will inevitably change at some point, but so far, do no harm, the guiding principle in medicine, seems to be the most rational one, noli nocere, as they say. Again, for us in Russia, these are not some speculative postulates, but lessons from our difficult and sometimes tragic history. The cost of ill-conceived social experiments is sometimes beyond estimation. Such actions can destroy not only the material, but also the spiritual foundations of human existence, leaving behind moral wreckage where nothing can be built to replace it for a long time. I mean, it's a strong warning there, and I'm very pleased to see he understands the importance of the preservation and growth of the population. And that's what an ethnostate is for, is to preserve the population and to encourage its growth and to encourage its prosperity. That's the real value of a country, is in its people. What do you make of this type of conservatism here, Matt?
Yeah, you know, I've mentioned this 100 times. He is not using the term conservatism in the way that Americans do. He does not believe in individualism. He doesn't believe in divorce. He doesn't believe in the neocon foreign policy. He doesn't believe in unrestrained capitalism, usury. That's what our conservatism does. We have nothing to do with it. He's reformed. When people ask him, who does he read? Well, Ivan Ilyin is one of the main people he mentions. I've done shows on him. This is a thrown and altered traditionalism. So when a Russian uses the term, it's extremely different. It's more like Solzhenitsyn and Dostoevsky, more than, you know, William Bennett. So let's be careful here. And I didn't see the original, because even the word conservatism is very similar in Russian, so it's taken from the West. I'm not sure what he uses here. But conservatism, you know, has so many different definitions, anything from 19th century thrown and altar stuff to the neocon movement. I mean, the word, just like liberalism, the word almost is meaningless. And what he's doing here, this is almost precisely taken from Edmund Burke and then later Russell Kirk. And of course, you know, Ivan Ilyin was, you know, kicked out of it. He lived in the Soviet Union. So, and he was a royalist. Putin was in the emperor's seat by the insistence of the monks in Mount Athos. This is what he's referring to. He can't come out and say it. But this is, you know, and Solzhenitsyn had this exact same mentality. This is almost a quote from him. How to rebuild something without shocking the system, you know, without, you know, just without bloodshed. And it's a long process. And he's done great with it. He's taken it very far. I don't know what he means by extremism here, but the Taliban disagrees, and Taliban's been very successful too. But there's no difference between a war-torn population in Afghanistan and the population in Russia in the 90s. They're pretty much in the same state, in the same circumstance. But this is a strategy on his part. But he's referring to the traditionalist conservatism of the 19th century, Ivan Ilyin, Solzhenitsyn, Dostoevsky. He's not referring to conservatism in our sense.
Well, I think maybe by extremism, he's referring to the totalitarianism of these progressive ideas that are just forced upon everyone. And he actually clarifies what he means after a question from a journalist. The journalist asks, does unhealthy conservatism frighten you? Where does the boundary separating the healthy from the unhealthy lie? At what point does a tradition turn from something that binds society together into a burden? And Putin responds with, "Anything can become a burden if you are not careful. When I speak about healthy conservatism, Nikolai Berdyaev always springs to mind, and I have already mentioned him several times. He was a remarkable Russian philosopher, and as you all know, he was expelled from the Soviet Union in 1922. He was as forward-thinking as a man can be, but also sided with conservatism. He used to say, and you will excuse me if I do not quote his exact words, conservatism is not something preventing upward, forward movement, but something preventing you from sliding back into chaos. If we treat conservatism this way, it provides an effective foundation for further progress." And that's really all we're trying to do is prevent us going backwards into the chaos of the past that leads to the end of the civilization. It's happened so many times before. Matt, what are your final thoughts on all of this today?
I've been reading Berdyaev most of my adult life, and I could fully understand, not religiously, but in a lot of other ways, he was a very idiosyncratic traditionalist philosophical, almost like a existentialism, but more like Heidegger than anybody else. I mean, to be very simple about it. Usually he mentions Elin and, of course, Solzhenitsyn, but in this particular case, all three of them are very similar. But Elin, who he usually mentions, was a royalist. But Berdyaev despised liberalism, libertarianism, conservatism in our American sense, and had a very, a strictly idealist conception of it. So I understand it's eccentric of him to use that. But all three of these guys that he always talks about are going in the same direction. I mean, Putin is not a philosopher, but he has a good instinct for who's right and who's wrong.
Well, it's certainly a great speech that he gave to the Valde Discussion Club there. Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Matt. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Grandpa Dan. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.